Welcome to this podcast of sermons from University Christian Church, Disciples of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. UCC is a community of faith where all are welcome, where we worship in a spirit of togetherness, where we embrace curiosity, community, and compassion. We don't claim to have all the answers, nor do we expect you to check your brain at the door, but rather we gather together to find the courage to engage the scriptures and to ask the big questions about who we are as people of faith, and who God is calling us to be. At UCC, we seek the sacred, commit to love, and empower to serve. And in so doing, we work together to transform the world through Christ's courageous love. My name is Reverend Dr. Russ Peterman, and I'm the senior minister here at UCC. And so most of these sermons are from me.
I want to extend a special welcome to those who are joining us this morning, either online or through the radio. KTCU, we're glad that you are here and hope that you feel a sense of being a part of the worshiping community of University Christian Church. Some of you know the metaphor, the story that Stephen Covey tells in one of his books about a motivational speaker who was trying to create a teachable moment. And he pulled out this large, clear, empty glass container, like a great big jar type thing, and he began also to fill out a box of large rocks, about yay big, and began putting those inside that jar, inside that large container. When it was clear that no more rocks would fit into that jar, he simply turned to the crowd and said, "So what do you think? Is it full?" And they all nodded their heads and said, "Yeah, that's as full as you're going to get it." And so he then pulled out from underneath his desk there, he pulled out a box of smaller rocks and began filling those in, and they began to fall in around the cracks and the crevices that were left there by those larger rocks. When it was pretty much full, he said, "So what do you think now?" And about this time, about half responded, "Yeah, I think it's about as full as you're going to get it." He then pulled out a bag of sand and poured the sand into this jar, filling it all the way to the top. "Is it full now?" he said. And now it was almost unanimous. Everybody was surely convinced that the container was full. And then he pulled out a pitcher of water and filled the jar, filled with water right up to the very top. At this point, it was very clear that it was completely full. And so he then asked the audience, the crowd that was there at that point, "So what's the point of this? What can we learn? How can we apply this to our lives?" And there was a woman sitting there in about the second row that raised her hand and, missing the point entirely, said, "There's always room for more stuff." He said, No, the most important lesson that we can learn in this is that you always have to put in the big rocks first. You always have to put in the big rocks first. But I think more importantly, or more often than not, it's the woman's voice in this situation that gets to be the loudest. That's how it is in our world. The culture, society seems to stress that you can always fill your life with more stuff. If we look at our hurried schedules and the pace in which we live our lives, it seems that there's always this demand to accept one more responsibility, take one more meeting, as if no were some sort of a bad word. The mantra of our culture today is there's always room for more stuff. Now, in Jesus' day, Paul's day, there was in the city of Rome a building called the Pantheon. If you were to go to Rome today, it is still there. It was built by Augustus when Jesus was just a boy. It was burned down at one point and then rebuilt and dedicated in the year 126. And the Pantheon was built as a temple to all of the gods. Now keep in mind that in Rome in that day, they had a god for everything. Even the sewer had its own god. In fact, the Pantheon means pan, meaning many, theon, meaning gods. The Pantheon, it was a temple to many gods. And these statues for all of the different gods were placed there in the Pantheon. A few years later, they were even willing to place a statue of Jesus in the Pantheon. The Romans thought, what would it hurt, right? There's always room for more. The more the merrier. And the Roman belief was is that you could have as many gods as you wish, just as long as you paid homage to Caesar. The problem came, of course, when Christians refused to allow Jesus to share equal billing with anyone else, especially Caesar. Because Jesus was Lord. They would have no other Lord, no bending of the knee toward anyone except for Jesus. This was the one place that you can't crowd anything more. There's no room for any more rocks. And many in those days paid dearly for their stand. There were thousands of crucifixions in that time. Now, perhaps some of us need to stand so today, because there are all these voices in our culture today, aren't there? Always calling us to do good, to do more. Your child's school needs you to serve on the PTA. They need more volunteers down at the Union Gospel Mission. Now, don't get me wrong, those are both great organizations, but I wonder sometimes if we might be sacrificing the best at the altar of the good. And trying always to crowd in more stuff that we may be forgetting to put the big rocks in first. I read a sermon not too long ago entitled Drowning in Shallow Water, which is a pretty profound image. It's quite an image, and it rings true in my life all too often. It talked about how we can drown in a shallow pond of the trivial and the lightweight, the insignificant. We tend to major in the minors and spend way too much time and energy on things that ultimately don't matter nearly as much. Barbara Brown Taylor was one of my favorite authors. I took a class with her when I was working on my doctorate, and I remember one of the things that she said was the best description of our culture is that we walk around digging shallow holes. We walk around digging shallow holes. I think this is especially true in our spiritual lives. We take a little bit of this and a little bit of that, never taking the time to dig deep into any one tradition, but just a little here, a little there. We're digging shallow holes. Thomas Kelly wrote a book in 1941 called A Testament of Devotion. He said this, he said, "We feel honestly the pull of many obligations and try to fulfill them all. And we are unhappy, we are uneasy, we are strained and oppressed and fearful that we shall be shallow." You see, we spend all of our energy, all of our time, all of our money on good things and not necessarily the best things. I had a professor in seminary who said that if you really want to see what you actually value, where your real priorities are, take a look at where you spend your time and where you spend your money. Some would say those are our two most valuable resources that we have, our time and our money. And think about it. If someone were to look at your calendar and your checkbook 100 years from now, what would they look and say were your highest priorities, the thing that you valued the most, if they were to look at your calendar and your checkbook? I said this to Kelly this morning as I was getting ready. What do you think people would say about you? And she said that I value straight teeth. I said, what do you mean by that? She said, if you look back over the last 10 years, I've spent tens of thousands of dollars in almost a day of our week, every year, every week, at the orthodontist, taking our children to get our teeth straightened. Put the big rocks in first, is what Paul seems to be saying to those young Christians in Colossae. You see, creeping into this immature congregation was this heresy of sorts that stated that Jesus was not the only Son of God, but just one of many gods. That while also continuing to place equal weight, equal regard to astrology and other philosophies, they professed that Jesus was not the only one, but just one of many, sort of like Rome's pantheon. Paul says that Christ is the only big rock, and we need to put him first. Did you hear what it was said? Live in him, walk in him. As you therefore have received Christ Jesus the Lord, continue to live your lives in him, rooted and built up in him, and established in the faith, and just as you were taught, abounding in thanksgiving. You see, what Paul is saying here is that Jesus should be the ordering principle of our lives, the one in whom we find our true identity, that Jesus is the one in whom our lives, maybe even the universe, just sort of aligns and makes sense, that in him we find our purpose, in him we find our meaning, that he fills the need that only he can fill. Maybe another way to say this is that Christ is the trunk in which we are all rooted, the source from which we all live, and all of our searching, all of our striving, that perhaps we would be well served to remember all that we already have. There's a great story about William Randolph Hearst, who made a fortune in the publishing business. He was also an incredible art collector. And once he sent out his agent to purchase a certain grouping of art pieces that he had heard about, that he read about, and was intrigued by, desperately wanted them for his collection. And so he sent out his agent, said, go find them. I have to have these for my collection. And after an extended period of time of searching, the agent returned back to tell him that he had indeed located the grouping that Hearst so desperately wanted. He said, I have good news. I have found it, and the better news is I found it in your warehouse. He already had what he so desperately desired. He already possessed that which he so eagerly pursued. He just didn't realize it. I wonder how many of us chase the same rabbit. The author of Colossians is writing to a community that has many different gods, many different philosophies, theologies, all competing for their attention. Listen to what Paul said. See to it that no one takes you captive through philosophy and empty deceit, according to human tradition, according to the elemental spirits of the universe, and not according to Christ. He says there were philosophies, these ideas of thought that were contrary to the gospel. And Paul was warning them, don't get caught up in these because they compete with the message of Christ. As one commentary put it, there are all these competing Christs amongst the people of Colossae. I wonder what competing Christs we have in our world today. Is it consumerism? Instant gratification? Is it shallow spirituality? Maybe it's the gospel of prosperity, fame, power, busyness. You see, I would argue that we all have our own competing Christ that we have to keep out of the pantheon of our own hearts. I recently read something by Anne Lindbergh, who was an author, the wife of Charles Lindbergh. And she wrote a book in 1955 called A Gift from the Sea. And in it she says this, but what I want first of all is to be at peace with myself. I want a singleness of eye, a purity of intention, a central core to my life that will enable me to carry out those obligations and activities as well as I can. I am seeking perhaps what Socrates asked for when he prayed, may the outward and the inward person be one. May the outward and the inward person be one. Do you ever feel so pulled, so distracted, so drained, so emotionally spent that there seems to be like this disconnectedness between what's on the inside and the appearance that you portray on the outside? Like there's no harmony between the inside and the outside person. I had one of those aha moments, an epiphany, I guess you could say, a realization. Now, I work really hard to be the very best minister that I can be, and I will be the first to acknowledge and admit and confess that I don't succeed nearly as often as I would like. In fact, I fail a lot of the time, but maybe the problem is that I'm chasing the wrong rabbit, that I'm reaching for the wrong gold ring, that maybe rather than trying to be the best minister that I could be, that I should focus on being the best Christian that I can be. Now, I think you all know that those are not one and the same. And I've known a few very successful big-name preachers who were not all that good at Christians. In fact, some of them you could hardly stand to be in the same room with. But what bothers me most is that there have been times in my life, times in my ministry, that I would fall into that category. I have a friend, Danny is a good friend of mine. I saw him this last week at General Assembly. Before going into the ministry, he used to work in management at Chick-fil-A. Now, say what you will about their politics, say what you will about what they stand for, those folks know how to make a good chicken sandwich. Can I get an amen? Danny told me the story that one time, a story that involved Truett Cathy, who was the founder and the CEO of Chick-fil-A. And they were gathered together, the board and some of the senior leadership, and they were all talking about how to grow Chick-fil-A, how to make it a bigger company, how they would grow their business. And so they started talking about marketing, and they started talking about strategy. And you could tell that Truett was getting frustrated and anxious. And finally, he slammed his hand down on the desk, and he said, "Let's focus on making it better. Because if we make it better, our customers will demand that it gets bigger. Let's make it better, and it will become bigger." You see, church, if you want to become more successful, focus on being better and not bigger. You want to be a better parent, a better friend, a better spouse, a better employee? Be a better person. Some might even say, be a better Christian. You see, we talk all the time, church leadership, staff meetings, we talk about how to grow the church, how to get people in the door, how to keep them coming back. But I wonder if maybe a better approach would be to focus on making it better instead of bigger. That if we treat one another with kindness, with love, with a generosity of spirit, if we focus on loving God and loving our neighbors, the people will come, and they'll keep coming if we focus on being better and not bigger. Now, I know that sounds simplistic, but I don't know about you, but my life could use a little simplicity these days. A simplicity that is whole, that is non-fragmented, that is poised with peace and love, where there is a connectedness between the inner person and the outer person. Where my priorities are seen in a way in which I choose to spend my time and my money. A simplicity that seeks the sacred in the ordinary. A simplicity that comes with an awareness of everything that we already have. The Danish philosopher Soren Kierkegaard once said, "To be a saint is to will the one thing." To be a saint is to will the one thing. Another way to say that, another way to translate that from its original language, the saint is the person who can will the one thing. You see, he's talking about the kind of person who knows what their life is about. Who, when you look at their calendar, who, when you look at their checkbook, you know exactly what their life is about. What about you? What would people say if they looked at your calendar and your checkbook? What would they say you value most in your life?
So thanks for listening. I do hope and pray that you found this sermon to be engaging and thoughtful and inspiring and maybe even a little challenging. I also hope that if you get the chance to join us on Sunday mornings in our sanctuary, you will. I think you'll find the welcome warm and inviting, the music inspiring, and there will always be a place at the table for you, regardless of who you are or where you come from or where you are on your spiritual journey. Just know that you're welcome here. And if you'd like to support the production of this podcast, and the ongoing mission and ministry of UCC, or to simply find out more about this community of faith, we invite you to go to universitychristian.org. Grace and peace to you.